You know, there are many people who think that Christianity is nothing more than a moral code, a set of rules to live by. And so they look at the Catholic Church and they think that, well, we just have a lot more rules than everybody else. Now, some like to admire us from afar when we actually seem to observe all of the rules, or at least try. More, however, like to think that it's all just a bunch of medieval superstition, and no thinking person would even think of curtailing his behavior with such legalism. But of course, everybody is ready to point fingers and jeer when Catholics do not measure up to the rules that we claim are divinely revealed. But those of us on the inside know that seeing the Catholic Church as nothing more than a set of rules is like seeing a stained glass window from the outside. It's all shadows and outlines, unintelligible to anybody who happens to pass by. The thing is that one has to be inside to realize that when the sun shines in the window, those shadows and outlines become brilliant colors and magnificent works of art. With all of the boldness of a masterpiece and the delicateness of something easily imperceptible. The moral teaching of the church is like that as well. What are called commandments and precepts and rules are nothing but shadows and outlines until the light of faith pierces the darkness from the outside of our souls and penetrates the interior of the soul. The church has a duty to preach the truth of the gospel in season and out of season, without fear. Even when her witness is compromised by the failings of some of her members, that can never be an excuse for the church to stop her divinely ordained commission to bring everyone to knowledge of the truth, which will give them abundant life. But of course, the mere fact of preaching it, even when she makes that teaching credible through the holiness of her members who live it, that doesn't bring people to live a moral life. Now, there are some people who think that if you just say it loud enough over and over again, then people are going to do the right thing. As Catholics, we believe in the natural law, that there is a law written on the hearts of men. But of course, as anyone with eyes to see can tell you, the vast majority of the world lives in direct contradiction to the gospel and to the lifestyle which the Catholic Church proposes. It's kind of easy to understand why. Modern society has become rife with the idea that truth is relative. You've got your truth, I've got mine. Even though nobody bothers to ask why that statement can be the only absolute. And once that idea is in place, then the way that you live your life just kind of depends entirely on you. The quality of your life depends on you. But what happens when some other human being infringes on what you see to be your quality of life? There can be no argument from any absolute. And so it becomes merely a will to power. And the survival of the fittest is the only dogma to stand the test of time in the culture wars. But you know, even despite all that, there is still some kind of feeling deep inside of man which fears divine retribution, right? You know, there are people who will say, okay, well, you know, I know that the Catholic Church says that John over there is going to hell because he's sleeping around on his wife and using drugs and not going to Mass on Sunday. But, you know, I like John, and I don't want to see him in hell. So I'm going to reject what the church teaches about, you know, adultery, self-mutilation, and the obligation to worship God. So at the root of this statement, we have several things that are kind of wrong here. Number one, the Catholic Church never says that any one specific person is going to hell, even if she upholds its existence. Only God can know the soul. And I'm absolutely convinced when we get to heaven, we're going to get a lot of surprises. You're going to see some people there. How did you get here? And then you're going to be like, where's my grandmama at? You thought she was going to be there, didn't you? Number two, why do we believe that our personal affection for someone can have any effect on their eternal salvation when it is that person who sends himself to hell? Not us, and not God, actually, either. And number three, should we not reject things because they are false and not because they're just not palatable to us? You know, the children of this world, if they ever read Dante at all, right, it's always the Inferno, right? You know, people, they get really interested in hell, and particularly Dante's very lurid and beautiful in its own way imagery of hell, right? It's like the people who, they come to the Catholic Church and all they want to hear about is exorcisms, right? It's all about demons and exorcisms and heads spinning around and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, what about, beauty, virtue, holiness? No, I don't want to know about that. I want to know about exorcisms. Okay, and then we wonder why we got problems, right? People never read the other two parts of Dante's trilogy, the Purgatorio and the Paradiso. Although I have to say, I was corrected last night. You know, a lady came up to me after the 5 o'clock Mass and said, Father, I've read all three. So there's at least two of us in the church who've done it. I said, also the school principal, who's a Dante scholar. So we got three, right? But people today have this weird obsession with hell. Not unlike the demons whose rebellion against God led them there in the first place. But for those of us who are not rebellious, or not as rebellious, for those of us whose life is hidden with Christ in God, we know that the message that the church has is one of life. Paul tells the new Christians at Colossus, since you have been brought back to true life with Christ, you must look for the things which are in heaven, where Christ is. Let your thoughts be on heavenly things. Paul doesn't tell them to observe a rigid moral code, the strict adherence to which would gain them brownie points with the big guy upstairs. That kind of moral code was the old law, the sacrifices of the temple, enslavement to the letter, all things which Christ came to free us from. Paul urges them not to look at this world's vices and sins and rules and regulations, but to heaven itself, where Christ sits at the right hand of the Father. He tells them, now the life you have is hidden with Christ in God. The life of the Spirit-filled Christian is not the external observance of a moral code. It is the renewal of the body and the soul by the invasion of heaven into it by the grace of Jesus Christ. So many people have this whole idea. They want to know the answer to one question. What is the absolute minimum that I have to do and not go to hell? Right? I get this question very surprisingly frequently, and I'm like, shouldn't you be more interested in heaven? Because if you are, then you're not going to have to worry about that, are you? Right. That is why you must kill everything in you that belongs only to earthly life. Fornication, impurity, guilty passion, evil desires, and especially greed, Paul tells us. When we come inside the temple of the soul, what seems from without to be shadows and outlines is radiated by faith to come alive as beauty, not within a structure in which we find ourselves, but within ourselves as heaven illuminates us from the inside out. If we spend all of our time in those things which the apostle tells us we must put to death, fornication, impurity, guilty passion, evil desires, and greed, then it's not surprising that all we see of the teaching of the church is darkness. And that every time we're mentioned by people, it's in the same sentence as the word hell, because where those things are present, God is absent. But you remember, God doesn't desire the death of the sinner. He doesn't wish for the sinner to die, but for the absence of God in us, which is vice, to die. And that could only happen when we stop storing up the treasures of this world like the rich man in the gospel and seek after the only thing which will last beyond our final breath, the love of God. The rich man tries to delude himself into thinking that his life is what it is not, eternal. He says, I will say to my soul, you have plenty of good things laid by for years to come. Take things easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. I don't know, it sounds kind of nice to me, right? Eat, drink, and be merry. Like, it sounds like a wonderful program for life, right? But he's like those who stand outside of the church and prefer their own blindness to what could be something beautiful because they can't see past what they have, even with the knowledge that what they have is going to pass away like them. And into this, God gives a rather rude awakening. You fool! This very night, the demand will be made for your soul, and this hoard of yours, whose will it be then? Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want my Jesus to be looking at me and saying, you fool, right? Not words that I want to hear from the lips of the Master. God is not giving him, and he's not giving us, a choice between heaven and hell. He's telling the rich man that because God is the author of life and death, he can take him whenever he wants. But what is he going to go with? The treasures of this world stored up in the barn of greed and impurity, where God is not to be found, or the pearl of great price, which is the Lord himself. The big question is not, where am I going when I die? But what am I going to have when I get there? For those who put to death the passing things of the world, which have nothing to do with God, then they're not going to have to worry about anything that Dante describes in his Inferno, but can make their own what he sees in the Paradiso. We, from the greatest body move, emerging in the heaven that is pure light, light of the understanding, full of love, love of the true good, full of joy within, joy that transcends all the heart conceiveth of.